It was going out and looking at a number of different places on Earth that represent a dramatic change, looking at a landscape that has turned into desert, and here's what desertification looks like when deserts consume a place, or this is what sea level rise looks like. I was up in the Bering Sea on an island off the coast of Siberia and looking at how that's changed over the last 20,000 years, how there used to be a land bridge now, and then now there's just water. So I'm looking at all these places that have undergone the changes that we are concerned about and saying, well, this is what it looks like. If the Earth turns into a desert, here, we're in the Atacama Desert in South America, the driest place in the world.
So what is it that we can learn then as far as being able to look to the future? You know, do we use these as sort of a roadmap or a guide that, okay, we can adapt, change is just the way things are, and that's just it, you know, there's always the change?
Well, I don't know if we can adapt. I guess I'm looking at it more as just a map to the planet itself to say these things do happen in case you think that the moment we're in now is going to last forever, which I think we do. I do. I believe that this town will be here for the rest of history, and this and the climate will be like it is. I feel that wish, and I think we all do. But I wanted to write this book to say, hey, just in case you didn't notice, big things do happen. Major changes do happen, and here's how they work. And here is the change we're inside of right now. Like, I'm looking at major extinctions in Earth history and concluding that it's never one event. It's never just humans came and did this and then everything went extinct. It's that there is one event and then another event, that there's a decline in species at the end of the reign of the dinosaurs, and then an asteroid hits, and then volcanoes go off, and you know, you get hit by one thing after the next, and then you're in a whole new world. So I'm trying to break down this idea that there will be an event that happens and the world will end. I'm saying no, it's a process, and we're in the process right now, and we're part of it. And I want to show how we work in this process, that we have a role. We don't have the only role, but we are a major player.
Now, you've written about the Anasazi in your book, House of Rain. Is that sort of the same sort of thing, that by studying them you can see how what happens or how?
Yeah, in a way. I looked back at the decline of that civilization 700, 800 years ago and looked at how drought affected them. But I'm also looking back at them because there's, you know, this supposed mystery of what happened to these people. They just disappeared. I wanted to write a book to say, well, actually there was a whole process of them appearing, spreading, understanding their landscape, and then stepping back in a period of drought to become the Pueblos we know today. So a lot of that book was saying that they're, like most of the things I write, that there is a process, that it's not just the mystery or just the flash of light and it's all over, that there's actually a long period in which decisions can be made.
Is it hard for us to look at the big picture, to understand that process, because our lives are relatively short,
yeah,
you know, 70, 80, 90 years if we're lucky?
Yeah, and I think I have the opportunity to step out of that because of the landscapes I travel in. Because I'm looking at time at a different pace, or time to me is more malleable because I'm in these landscapes where you can see millions of years and the stratified cliffs and the rock formations, and you can see cliff dwellings and artifacts. And after a while, to me, time becomes very flexible. So I think I'm bringing that perspective over here into now to say, well, even though we live these short lives, we can't really see what's going on. I've been out there looking at what goes on beyond our lifespans, and I'm bringing that story back.
And how did you get started doing that?
It's just what I do.
Just what you do. I mean, what was that? Was there a moment? I mean, we're talking about how things are gradual. So
yeah.
Was that the situation here, or was there, in this case, a moment you saw something, or you witnessed something, or you experienced something that made you want to start to explore this?
No, it's always happening. I've always lived in that environment. I've always traveled. So it's always there. I'm facing it all the time. I think it's built up over time. I think I've you know, sometimes is maddening. Right now I'm writing pretty extensively about the Ice Age, and whatever landscape I look at, I see mammoths. If there is a mountain range, it suddenly gets covered with ice. It's I'm always seeing a different time around me. And maybe eventually I'll just go insane.
So is that what happens when you come to a place like Vermilion, South Dakota as well, that you think back millions of years?
Yeah, we went out above the river today and just stood up there looking down, and I was just imagining the different times during the Ice Age when the river must have been small because everything was capped in ice and it wasn't letting out much water. And then I'm thinking, okay, 12,000 years ago, the glaciers were melting fast. This river would have been huge. There would have been, you know, bloated mammoths floating down and forests washing away. And so I think you do that naturally. I think you go out, once you know, if you know a river, you know how things work, you go out and see a river and you see the river that is now, but you also see the river that will be and the river that was. You see all the channels and, you know, where else in this landscape did this river run? These things are going through your mind all the time.
But it sounds like you go further back than the way most of us. I know that when I'm, you know, out and about at a lake or something like that, I think, well, what was it like when the Native Americans were here?
Yeah.
You just go back a couple hundred years, but you're going back a long, long way.
Oh, yeah. This last book, I was going back, I think I went back 4.2 billion years. You know, where I'm looking at the earth that was here before, the earth that is here now, that in between now and then, the planet was bombarded by asteroids and the surface was reliquified. So what earth was here before this one?
And that was the book Apocalyptic Planet?
Yeah. It's a tough title.
Yeah, I can't say apocalyptic.
I can't quite say it either. It just happened.
But it's a field guide to the ever-ending Earth, and I find that sort of a fascinating concept, and you were getting into that a little bit before. Your talk last night at USD was on that a little bit, that the ever-ending, that
yeah.
We're always at an ending.
I mean, there's enough evidence right now to suggest that there was an entire planet here, you know, a whole different planet. That was here before. That was here for 4.2 billion years and before that. That there was liquid water, that there were continents, and that all was destroyed and restarted. And so I'm interested in this idea that the end is constant, which, you know, in a sense is that the beginning is constant, that the beginning is happening all the time because, you know, it seems like a rudimentary kind of kindergarten way of thinking, but maybe that's how my brain works, that every ending is a beginning, but the endings never stop, and that there is not just one moment where everything goes extinct. It's a multi-thousand year, million year process that you're inside of. So the end is not a moment. It's an entire span. It's all the time.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Craig Childs, who spoke at the University of South Dakota last night. His books include Apocalyptic Planet, Field Guide to the Ever-Ending Earth, House of Rain, and others. This all brings up the question, then, what should we be doing right now, you know, as people?
Yeah, a lot. I think just taking extinction, for example, as I look at past extinctions, whatever animal or plant makes it through becomes the next reality, the next world. And so every animal that doesn't go extinct now makes up the future Earth. And so right now we're making those choices. And to me, I say hold on to as much as you can. Hold on to as many ecosystems, as much of this world as you can, because that's the richness of whatever happens next. So whatever, we all have different things we can do, whether it's working with certain landscapes, certain ecosystems on the ground, you know, giving money to your organization or whatever it is, it's doing something to preserve what is here now. Because I think a lot of what's here now is being threatened. I think that our species is becoming so numerous and occupying so many places that there isn't going to be much left if we're not careful. So I think being careful now, whatever that means, I mean, there are a million different ways of doing it. I think we get lost with the hopelessness of looking into the future and going, oh, what can I do about climate change? Like, it's certainly out of one person's hands, but you can look at a certain stretch of river and say, well, let's work on this. Let's work on this 1 mile of river and help protect the riparian ecosystem that exists here now, because this is going to be a place where wildlife can gather. This is going to be a place where species can migrate through.
So you don't get lost in the hopelessness?
No, I don't. Maybe I'm kind of Pollyannish, but I do. I think that the future is going to come one way or another. All this is going to come to pass. What can we do now? It feels like running out of a house that's on fire. You know, what are you going to grab as you're leaving? And I don't think it's that immediate. I think it's more generational. It's going to take time. And as I discovered looking at past events on the Earth, you never really know when you're on the left side of the end or the right side of the end. You know, whether you're in the new world or you're still in the old world, it's not quite as cut and dried as that. And so I think that's why I don't have that hopelessness, because I think, well, we don't know where we are in the process. We just know we're in the process. And to be paralyzed right now, to think that you can't do anything, that's going to be a problem.
This week marked the fifth anniversary of the BP oil spill in the Gulf, an environmental disaster. But I'm wondering, from that experience, you know, what we've learned about ecosystems and what researchers have found about the resilience of nature at this point, after 5 years, do we know anything? I mean, is this sort of a guide in any sort of way?
Yeah, I think so. I think that. I mean, we recognize how easily things are disrupted and how strong a rebound can be. I mean, we're still a long way from rebound, but that, and I guess as I'm writing about things, that I'm looking at both ends. I'm looking at how fragile ecosystems are and how they unravel, but then how things return and how long it takes an ecosystem to recover. And you know, in a way, things don't really recover. They become
change.
Something new. But yeah, I don't know how much I know about the resiliency of the Gulf Coast at this point. But I know about the way things fell apart. And I think we, just like the Valdez oil spill, you know, we learned pretty quickly that these really rich ecosystems can collapse rapidly. And then it takes a long time to build them back. But you can see the resilience in it. I'm very interested in resilience. I looked at lava flows and that just completely destroyed landscapes or everything that was living there. And then how things move back and where that recovery comes from. And the recovery comes from having an intact ecosystem nearby that can seed those places that have been destroyed. So you have something that you maintain, that you take care of, and that becomes your seed bank for a place that's been wrecked. I think that's how it worked in the Gulf Coast, is you had to have places that were still intact in order to start the process again, start the resilience up.
How do you see resilience from the point of view of humans? I'm thinking of, say, Hurricane Sandy. You know, how, you know, is there any connection between the resiliency of nature and the resiliency of what we do as people when we're confronted by disasters like that?
Well, I think we do the same thing. Yeah. I think that we are natural systems and that we rebound. Some people don't move back. Some people build right on the beach again. Which in a way we look at and we go, how foolish that you're building on the beach again, but that's what we do. We're holding down that ground. So I think we return to places and we live there again. We bounce back just like everything else does, but with that loss, you know, so much is lost in the process. So much is destroyed. And that's what I worry about. I guess that's where the hopelessness comes in, where I go, okay, everything's going to be okay. you know, we'll get hit by a major storm and we'll rebound and we'll build ourselves back up. But how much was lost in that process? How much destruction, death? I think we rebound just like everything else does, but we lose just like everything does.
In your writing, in your books, what is it that you want readers to take away? Do you see it as just trying to help them understand from the perspective that you've gathered from your travels, or do you see it as sort of a call to action to a certain extent?
That's a good question.
Or do you just write?
In a way, I just write because I don't always know what call to action I'm delivering. You know, I'm not sure if I should be the one calling people to action. But often when I'm writing, I'm writing about ancient things. I'm writing about primitive processes, skills, and I'm trying to reach back into the past and hold on to that stuff. As I watch us barreling into whatever singularity of a future we're looking at, I want us to remember that, oh, we were from the earth, we were from the ground, we were a species that knew animals, that knew weather, that knew rivers, and I want to hold on to that. I don't want us to lose that as a species. So I guess on a very fundamental level, I'm just trying to keep connected to these old primal things. And I guess the call to action is the action of holding on to this, that hold on to these ecosystems, hold on to these species, hold on to our memories, because it's easy to lose them, and they will affect how we operate in the future. They will affect what decisions we make right now. So I imagine that's why I'm writing. But I'm not always sure. Sometimes it's just that I see something and I go, wow, look at that. I need to write about that.